Pickaxe.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello, and welcome to the Chance Encounters podcast. We've been running board game cafes for over 6 years now. Ooh. From hen do's to family do's, from first dates to breakups, we've recommended a board game for every situation, and now we're looking for a fresh challenge. Each week, we'll be inviting a guest on who will put our board game knowledge to the test. They'll come armed with an abstract and absurd scenario, and it's up to us to figure out what that situation calls for, and then recommend a game that totally explodes their kittens.
Nice.
Whichever board game recommendation our guest loves the most will score a point. And at the end of the series, whoever has the most points will be crowned the Titan of Board Games.
No way.
So, I am Richard Scarsbrook. I'm one of the founders and creators of Chance Encounters. And unfortunately, I've never actually managed to finish the ink of a biro pen. I've never managed to run it out. Mm. I've always either lost it, broke it, or generally just destroyed it.
I think it's a myth.
I don't think you can.
I know people who claim to have.
Mm.
I don't trust those people.
Well... This is Ben, my co-host.
I'm Ben from the Yogscast. I make videos and other things, and I love board games. I'm a massive nerd. And yeah, if you've emptied out your biro before it's dried out, what? How? I don't believe you.
Please send in your empty biros just as, to prove that this isn't actually going to happen. Please don't. And our guru for this week is none other than the Titan of board games so far, Dickie.
Hi guys, I'm Dickie. I am also a nerd, geek, board game addict, whatever you want to call it. And this is my favorite pen, and I dread the day it dies. I dread the day it dies.
When
it dies,
I
shall be very sad. It's about 5 years now.
Wow. See, again, just no one has ever managed to run out of pen.
No, but like I use it sparingly. Special occasions pen, this one.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Treat pen.
Honored the podcast with my favorite pen.
And our special guest for the week is Alex. You've come over all the way from Canada just for us.
That's true. I am. Hello. I'm Alex.
That's your camera there.
Okay. Hello. I'm Alex. I'm also in the Yogscast. And I have been a full-time content creator for 5 years. And
God, it's like a man who's done a tour of duty.
I've got memories.
They said it should have been in and out in 1 year. Yeah.
They said it wouldn't last. It wasn't a career.
And my crowning ball game achievement was probably beating Ben at Star Wars Rebellion last night.
You did. You're very good at that game.
I had a lucky first hand, and it was a very, very good, hard-won victory despite my terrible luck with dice.
Just the worst dice I've ever seen.
Now, I don't know how to feel about this yet. Were you baddies or goodies?
I was the rebel. I was the rebellion.
Okay. Well,
that depends on a certain point of view.
It's a feel-good story, you guys.
Yeah, somehow Mon Mothma opened the game with talking the fishmen into supplying two of their finest cruisers.
Wow.
Which was hard to fight. Them fishmen ships. They shoot good.
Yeah, well, no, they didn't.
No.
Not all the amount of misses I was getting. Wow, I've never had that luck with dice before.
It was astonishing. It just gave me a chance, I think.
But you've come armed with an abstract and absurd scenario, purportedly.
Yes.
Alex, what are we talking about?
Well, I was thinking William Shakespeare meets a tentacled-armed alien.
Oh, okay. Well, as we do.
It's a strong start.
Okay, yeah.
Is that all right? Is that
the whole,
that's the whole thing?
You said wacky. Yeah, that was, that was the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah. So they're playing a ball game.
Yeah.
They meet via, I don't know. Is it the, yes, sorry. Let me try that again. William Shakespeare, in his century, meets a tentacled alien in disguise.
In disguise?
Oh, okay. Like a time, is it a time-traveling alien?
No.
Okay.
So it's in Shakespeare's century.
Yeah.
Okay.
So are you playing this game? Is it? Are you playing with Shakespeare?
Was I meant to be?
You don't have to be.
No. This is what we're trying to do. Excellent. Okay.
That would be more interesting, though, if I could be.
You can, I'm not so your scenario. You can alter it as you wish.
Yeah, you're in charge here.
So you can take our brilliant suggestions at the end and then palm them off as your own to William Shakespeare.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
maybe this is like Shakespeare origin stories. Maybe some of his weird ideas came from this tentacled alien. You know, Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah, exactly.
We do not need to get into the whether William Shakespeare wrote his plays argument. I spent my entire degree. Never again.
Oh my God, we've got an expert.
Amazing. But now we can finally put the degree to use, Dickie. This is your time.
I know. I actually liked more contemporary 70s absurdist theatre. So I have an out.
Excellent. Okay. So we've got, are they playing a two-player game? Could it be for more people? What kind of, does this tentacled monster have any particular themes that they might like?
It's just a two-player game. It's just a two-player game.
Right.
Okay.
It's two-player.
Okay.
And are there any stakes here? Mm. Is this like a challenge of the alien showdown? Who's like, if you can't defeat me in a board game, my alien armada's coming to destroy the world? Or is it more of a gentlemanly, like, oh, fancy you visiting from the other side of the galaxy?
Let's just have a friendly game.
The alien is currently in disguise. So,
right.
Yeah.
What are they disguised as? And have they got tentacles that can function as hands?
He's wearing gloves.
Okay, yeah.
Can he squeeze five of his tentacles into the glove, one to act as each finger? Does he have, like, full dexterity?
No.
Okay, is it more of a mitten situation?
Yes. He's got a couple of mittens to kind of hide the...
Yeah. Right.
But he does speak English. Old English.
Okay. Ye old English.
That was his elective at the alien school of old English.
Yeah. So what they're doing is that he's just doing like a sabbatical to come over here and just test out.
Oh, like a cultural exchange. He's taking his gap year on Earth.
Wait, who did they take? are they doing one of those where you get, we're in school where you're like, I'll go and visit their family for a couple of months?
I think he's doing like squid backpacking, you know, before he settles down and gets a career.
It's Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy situation.
Well, I mean, this is all up to Alex. Like, if you don't like any of these ideas,
like
you can veto.
I like the gap year idea.
Yeah. He's on the gap year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought I'd put a few miles on my soul before I came back and chained myself to a desk. filling out squid paperwork.
So he's learned about kind of, you know, civilization from observing from his spaceship. And he's like, oh, I think I'll go down there. I've heard about this William Shakespeare dude. I'd like to meet him.
See what all the fuss is about.
Yeah. He seems the pinnacle of all human beings. So he'll give us a good introduction to everything else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Play a board game with William Shakespeare, then off to fence with Christopher Marlowe, presumably. You know.
Indeed.
Yes. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And for all the people at home who don't know who that is.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw out playwrights, guys. If you don't know who it is, it's a playwright.
Dickie can finally use all of the obscure references. All those literary buffs out there are going to be like, this is my podcast!
It's like the tiniest Venn diagram.
I think that's just because the circle of people that are going to know about these playwrights is already very small. Yeah.
As is the circle of people who listen to this podcast.
Well, true.
I mean, to be fair, it's not going to be an issue. I'm going to run out quickly.
If you're one of those people that is in that sweet spot of the Venn diagram, please let us know so Dickie knows he's not alone in this. So we've got this mittened up, tentacled guy. Why does he feel the need, or why do they feel the need to be in disguise, out of interest?
Well, he's a tentacled alien, so he might stand out a little bit.
There are like squids.
I think Victorian
Not Victorian.
No, it's not Victorian. Sorry, Elizabethan. Mm. England might have a problem with the tentacle monster. I don't think...
They're not quite accommodating.
I think the Spanish were a little bit, you know, they weren't... If the Spanish weren't welcome, then certainly an alien.
They had a big problem with Manor Wars back then, you know. It almost works.
Maybe they think he's Scottish.
He's what?
Scott, maybe he could be impersonating a Scot.
Oh, yeah. Because so, I bet, like, a Londoner, if they just hear someone going...
And then you, Scottish.
That must be Scottish.
Would you agree with that, Dickie? Have you ever been mistaken for a tentacle-based monster?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't...
No, it's okay. I'm Scott, like, with an emphasis on the ish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, it's kind of Scottish. Yeah, no.
I love Scotland, by the way.
I mean, the other thing is medical science hadn't really advanced that. He's just got the affliction. It's just not very well, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just got to say it a few times before you really get there and get the understanding going.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, well, the if he beats William Shakespeare, he gets a part in his new play.
Oh, cool.
That could be the stakes.
That
and if the
for?
Alien loses, he'll take off his disguise and show who he really is.
Ah.
But that would mean that William knows that he's in a disguise for the stake to be that he would have to take off his disguise.
Yes, and William Shakespeare wants to know who's behind the...
Well, he's a sharp cookie, who's behind the... He knows. He can tell when someone's not a Scotsman.
Are we talking about... I've written Macbeth, thank you very much. Yeah. I know all about the Scots people, and that's not an accent.
Reveal me your secrets.
So I'm thinking that the squid person is wearing like a Venetian mask, or is there something
yes,
else?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Oh, amazing.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Kind of Phantom of the Opera vibes. Mm. Yeah. Sorry, that's Lloyd Webber. That's not Shakespeare.
I love the idea that it's for some unknown reason there's just a million references to every Shakespeare play.
Mm. Yeah.
Somehow. He's a big fanboy, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's been observing. He's got like a little camera in the theatre, in the globe, which kind of feeds into his spaceship, not via cable, via, you know, like, Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
4G.
I'm willing to believe an interstellar space-traveling alien has wireless camera technology. Yeah. It's okay. Yeah.
Are you sure? Could it just be a little bit too far, maybe?
But nothing more sophisticated than mittens for a disguise. That's perfect. So yeah. How about Shakespeare? Like, is he into board games, do you reckon?
Why not?
This is a new experience for him?
I would say he's up on chess.
Yeah, I guess chess was around. Absolutely. And like, I think there's a lot of kind of, in his plays, there's a lot of like, will they, won't they, and kind of people tricking each other by being in disguise and stuff.
Right.
So like, his characters aren't kind of wily, but he creates some pretty kind of silly games going on.
You're saying Shakespeare has invented his own game at this point?
No, I'm saying like this is more like the games afoot kind of thing. This is like, you know, mystery.
We've got like Othello's overlapping motives and stuff like that. Yeah. Like he can think abstractly and strategically for sure. Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to lie. I've spent most of my adult years trying to avoid anything to do with Shakespeare. This is bringing back like all of the thoughts of like GCSEs and having to be force fed Shakespeare stuff.
I'm completely the opposite. I'm like,
really?
It's giving me the fuzzy tingles. Yeah, I'm happy about it.
Admittedly, just this week, I was talking about the Shakespeare video. There was a video of Macbeth that was made by Hugh Hefner of all people.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And that was the video they decided to show us when I was like 16. I was like, do you really think this is appropriate?
Maybe they were trying to, you know, get down with the kids. Who are the kids into these days?
I mean, I once saw Macbeth on a bouncy castle where all of the props were inflatable, and that was marvelous.
Wait, they did an actual show of Macbeth on
Like the stage was the bouncy castle. Mm-hmm. All of the props. Is this a dagger in front of me? No, it's an inflatable banana. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Where'd you go from there to top it?
I mean, Lady Macbeth was an inflatable doll.
Was this a one-man show?
It was at the Edinburgh Festival, which gives it some kind of, you know...
Context.
That makes more sense
why this happened, yeah.
It wasn't just a fever dream.
No,
Does that mean there was a ventriloquist associated with this, then?
No, that well, ventriloquist or someone behind the bouncy castle.
Right. Yeah, that's voices. A fancy name yeah. for man yeah. shouting behind bouncy castle.
They basically just went, how do we do Punch and Judy but have it a Shakespeare theme? then on an inflatable castle, this is how it's going to work.
Like, it was one of those experiences at the Edinburgh Festival where you walk into a room not really knowing what's going to happen, and then something that you could never even conceive kind of unfolds.
Then you walk out still not really understanding what happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the location that our Shakespearean, well, Shakespeare is in with their alien tentacled bestie at this point.
Can we call the squid monster Caliban?
Oh my God, yes.
We should give them an...
Yes,
is that absolutely. Their name? We shouldn't just assign them a name. Is that the
well,
name
I was thinking something
by?
Like Jeff, but Caliban's probably good.
Because that's what he calls the sea monster in The Tempest, right?
Yeah.
So maybe he met this tentacled monster and then thought, I've got an idea for a new play now.
But he doesn't know.
Unless he wins.
Yes.
He just maybe knows that he's not Scottish.
Yeah. Yes, he just knows he's not Scottish and wants to figure out who is that non-Scotsman man?
And why is he wearing a Venetian mask?
And mittens in summer.
This is a very heavy coat you're wearing, sir.
I just like it. It all seems to like, you know, it all falls into place if it's Caliban and that's how he got the name.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
The tentacle monster has seen the play The Tempest and has called himself Caliban.
It's the fanboy.
Fanboy.
Or girl. Fan person.
You know, because I don't think Shakespeare could pronounce his real name, which is...
That's true.
Can you
or
pronounce
something,
his
something, maybe?
Real?
Yes. That's what I was also thinking.
Yeah, I can't do that. Caliban's fine.
We're good. Past. So whereabouts are they playing? Is this just in their like local pub? Is it a place that has been... like? How did they meet? They on the street? They were just like, why are you wearing a mask? Or did Caliban come up to Shakespeare first? What's
yes?
That is the last rule of improv.
Just keep saying yes.
That's exactly right. Yes, right. Caliban or sort out Shakespeare at his local drinking hole.
Okay,
and challenged him to a board game
straight off the bat.
Straight off the bat. Excuse me, sir. Sorry, that's not Scottish.
Yeah.
I won't do a Scottish.
We can imagine.
Yeah. I'm a massive fan and I would love to get a part in your play. As you can tell, I'm a very normal Scotsman. But if you beat me at this game, I will reveal my true self.
That isn't a normal Scot. Out himself immediately. Shakespeare is obviously very interested at this point. It's suddenly like, wow, this is a not normal Scotsman.
Yeah.
What could possibly be going on here?
I feel like he'd be intrigued by mystery.
Okay, so at this point, Shakespeare wants to win. He needs to know what's going down, which means that maybe he's going to be looking for something that is in his...
Repertoire,
yeah, okay. It gives him an edge. Suddenly he sees the mittens and he's like... I could use those.
Jenga. Yeah. I've got him beat. Easy peasy.
Yeah. Is there any... Did Caliban think any further about the board game recommendation? Did he come up with something being like, oh, it has to hit these things? Or was he just like...
Yeah.
He didn't... He just got... His head froze. It was like, I'm so awed by Shakespeare at this point. That he just would just say yes to any board game recommendation.
Yes.
And who are we pitching for? Are we pitching for games that Shakespeare would want to play or games that Caliban would rather play or just for pure spectacle?
Yes. I think it's got to be a bit of a hybrid between the two.
Are we just trying to make it the best game it can be rather than like favouring one victor over the other?
Yeah, because you want it to be a fair contest, even though Shakespeare may do some underhand tactics to try and win. But I think that Caliban, you know, he's an extraterrestrial, intelligent, sentient being. He's surpassed our language, our ways of communication. So he's got the ability to just learn, like, pow. So it could be something that favours Shakespeare, but
it's not going to do that much of an edge.
I think we're underestimating, like, I know we've got the mittens, but tentacles would be so good for certain games. Like, imagine playing Jenga or like pick up sticks or something, anything dexterity, where you just, they got a sucker and you're like,
you know, yeah,
just that's true. Immediately, like the precision that you'd be able to get.
And the fact that they don't have like, they're invertebrates or the other one.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that they can just be like, I'll just put it down and then just bend the fingers backwards. I don't have to deal with your laws of physics.
Yeah.
Your biology.
There's no bones holding me down.
Exactly.
It's his catchphrase.
Inevitably. The first thing that he's saying.
No, it's not. It's a terrible catchphrase.
Yeah. Imagine if that showed up in Shakespeare just halfway through Twelfth Night, just like, no bones on that guy.
Yeah. You can take a pound of flesh. Well, you can take it from literally anywhere because I have no bones.
I mean, it would have been really, like, can you imagine if Shakespeare was just writing board games into the plays there for front and center? Mm-hmm. Just like, I know what this play needs, more downtime.
Oh, yeah. Like, is there any relation between the Othello board game and Othello, the Shakespeare play?
I don't think so. I think
Othello's been around a lot longer, so it would have been that Shakespeare would have based it on that. But I think Othello is just the name, right?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
What kind of
guru are you? Jeez.
That sounds like an excellent question for a Chancing House guru. Why do you not know this obscure reference?
This is right, so confession time. I get this in the cafe when people ask me about old games. I'm like, I have very much spent my whole career in Chance Encounters focusing on what's come out this week. Yeah. People ask me, do you know how to play Risk? I don't know how to play Risk. I've forgotten how to play Cluedo. I have pushed those things out of my brain. I do not know how to play a lot of the classics.
Well, that's fair, because they essentially are just better evolved versions of those games available now.
Exactly.
You're only going back for nostalgia's sake rather than, I would never recommend those games to anyone.
And like, I've had to teach Monopoly a couple of times, but that's fine because everyone makes up the rules to Monopoly. So it's I don't need to remember what they are. I can just say them and people will believe me.
Yeah.
Like, I had the thought about this. I think teaching Monopoly, it's a little bit about it's a little bit like teaching people how to brush your teeth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I've never taught anyone how to brush my teeth before.
Well, no,
sounds quite strange.
Presumably you've taught your kid how to brush their teeth.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of passed down, but there's not a rule book, you know. You wouldn't ever like send your child to go and read the rules to brushing their teeth. You just tell them
how to do it. It's an oral tradition, if you will.
I'm still waiting for my...
Sorry.
I don't know why that one really got me.
Monopoly probably taught me more about finances than school did. It's like in school, you never get taught anything about how to get a mortgage and manage your day-to-day finances, whereas Monopoly, you spend too much money. The bank's going to come and take it all away.
You lose.
What do you mean we can't just print more without consequences? I don't know what's going on.
But I can see the bank right there has lots of money in. You just give it to... I'm in hard times right now. Just give me some money.
What is the most popular board game at your cafes?
I think it changes, doesn't it? It's a moving target.
Depends
for sure.
on who's recommending as well, because they'll be like, oh, you want a two-person quick board game? Well, let me offer you this six-person... No, they don't do that. They really should don't. But what we do is there's something like a recent board game that they've played that they can't kind of get enthused about. And so you'll tend to find that the things that we're most enthused about is the things that we want to recommend. And they're like right on the tip of our tongues. If they offer, they've got a real idea of what they want to play, then we get to kind of do this where we're like, oh, well, if you want this kind of experience, then we'll give you one. Is there anything that you recommend recently, Jackie?
Like the thing I'm recommending all the time at the minute is a very quick 15-minute game called Battle Sheep.
Which is
fantastic. Like it's a really great little game because it's a kid's game, so really accessible to everyone. But the great thing about it is it's the most ruthless, cutthroat, mean, like cruel game in the cafe. And that seems to hit the, you know, people like that.
Mm-hmm. One people of the like... benefits of that game is that, unlike a lot of other games where you have a setup and it's, you know, unwieldy and all the rest of it, the setup is pretty much part of the beginning of the game. So you're literally like making the board and you get to choose how that board creates by putting these like panels of, I don't know, six or eight.
They're four hex tiles.
Four hex tiles. And you get to place those down.
and then you get your little like stack of metallic sheep, as it were, that you place on it. And so that kind of, it is a really good game. It's quite simple, quick.
What's like the core mechanic of it? What are you trying to do?
So you're trying to take over as much of the field as possible. Mm-hmm. And so on your turn, you take some sheep from one of your piles of sheep and move them as far as you can in a straight line. And that's the rules. You've done it. I've taught the game. So it's really accessible, really straightforward. But like you end up blocking other sheep in at a rate that is frankly alarming.
Right. So it's all about stopping people getting long lines of movement, trying to force them around corners and stuff.
Well, you're trying to block people in. So you want to spread out as much as possible. However, if you get a tower of five sheep and you can't move anymore, that's 5 points that you're not going to get at the end of the game.
You want to encircle them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm. You're literally trying to herd up sheep with other sheep.
Yeah.
Which is great.
So you're like slowly splitting down different stacks. You'll have them all over. And the idea is that you move them as far as possible so you can't stop anywhere along them.
Oh, right.
Which means that you've only got like, you know, three or four different potential areas, but then you've got borders of other fields maybe, and then you've got those sheep around you, and then you're...
If you get caught in a bottleneck, it's suddenly like, ah, God, someone's going to trap me kind of thing. But you might have to go there because you've got to go as far as you can, which is
great.
But
equally, if you can somehow block it in such a fashion that you have an access to an entire field around that no one else can get to, you got loads of points. Yeah, so it is surprisingly cutthroat for a sheep-based game.
We get the question a lot, more than I thought we would, actually. I need a game that is going to make me hate my friends the next day. And that tends to be the answer to it. Yeah.
Perfect. My dog is half border collie, so he has the herding instinct. So he'll, when we're going out for walks with my partner, myself and Nigel, he'll use the lead to kind of herd us in the direction that he wants to go. So he'll wrap the lead around us and be like, no, we're going over here now.
Amazing.
Yeah. So he'd probably enjoy that game.
My dog is also half border collie. Yeah. I feel your pain.
Does he do the same thing where my dog used to, if we were too far apart, he would herd us back together again on the walk? Like if we, like, one of us has stopped to look at something or the other one had like walked off in a different direction, he'd just come straight back and go, nope, come back together, everyone together. Carry on.
Well, just give your dog mittens and a Venetian mask.
Well, there
and
we
then,
go.
Then you can play the game.
Battle sheep.
Yeah, so are there any board games that like you just love that kind of style or mechanic or things that you don't like in board games?
Well, I play map games for a living. Mm-hmm. So like Hearts of Iron, all like the Paradox stuff, and hence like Victoria 3. And so that kind of translates into my board game interests. So like Star Wars Rebellion is a big favorite. I really enjoy Twilight Struggle. I even enjoy the occasional game of like Catan. And there's a game, I forget the name of it, but you start off as like a... You pick one race. It could be like goblins or something like that.
Small World.
Yes. So they go into decline and then you pick a new one and stuff. So,
yeah, and you keep building on the ruins of an old empire with your new race in a fantasy kingdom.
Yes. So Small World, even like Risk is always good for raging. I believe I so close at the Jingle Jam to winning that Risk game and then everyone told.
That's the problem with Risk. You've really got to be in second place.
Yeah.
Do a leapfrog at the last minute.
So any kind of like map based conquest games are kind of my go-to, but I do really enjoy other like deck building, like Arkham Horror, anything where I can build like a custom deck and stuff like that. So like living card games as well. Yeah. Living board games. Yeah. So that's kind of my bread and butter.
Awesome. That's good to know.
All right. So we've got a game for two people, at the very least. I mean, it could be more, but probably a game that's for two people. We've got potential issue with the mittens, but, you know, maybe Shakespeare depends. He's getting to choose at this point, so maybe he'll consider whether to take advantage of that or not. We've got pretty much open in terms of what they might like to play, but it should be a battle of wits, presumably, because that's what Shakespeare's trying to prove, that he's the wittiest. And we have the fundamental challenge at the end, so it definitely has to have a winner and a loser at this point. There's no real room for draw. Okay. Is there anything else that we kind of missed in this one?
We got all the basics covered, unless there's anything you want to add.
No.
Hello, my friend. My name's Sean, and I want to end your suffering. No, not like that. With meditation in my new podcast, Mindfulness for Gamers. Each episode, I'll take you through how mindfulness can help you to feel less anxious and frustrated and put you on the path of happiness, all through the lovely, grimy lens of video games. So make time to level up your mental health and take the first step on your spiritual skill tree. Join me and subscribe to Mindfulness for Gamers right here, right now.
All right, so let's get on to some board game recommendations. Who would Dicky, as the titan of board games, you get to go first.
Privilege. Okay. So the game I'm going to recommend is a game called The Duke. I think it's going to fit in with the kind of surroundings. It feels like quite an old game, and it is a variant on chess.
Oh, okay.
So you're playing on a little kind of square chessboard, like you would normally, and you've got your duke and two foot soldiers to begin with. And you have to protect your duke, just like you would in chess with the king. However, you can either, on your turn, you can either move a piece or you can get a new piece from a bag. So what the pieces you'll get will be completely randomized. So as you go along, your strategy really has to like adapt, which I think would be great for what you were saying earlier with like Caliban being able to like immediately learn a game. This is a really good one because you've got to kind of adapt that strategy. It's not like there's a one path to victory. You've really got to, it feels like a battle of wits, a battle of minds. But each time you use a piece on the board and move it on the board, you flip it over and it's got a completely different move set, a completely different skill set. So it's really interesting. It's a great one for kind of strategy. It's a great one for a couple of rounds as well. Like I've never really seen anyone in the cafe play it just once.
Okay.
They always kind of go for another round because it's one of these things where it's very easy to learn because all of the moves are written on the pieces themselves. However, the strategy and mastering it, that's where the real fun of it comes through. But it feels like a really kind of moving target in terms of the strategy and kind of how you're going to win. And it's also got this great thing where the Duke himself, so, you know, in chess, you've got your king and he's basically a lame idiot.
Yes.
that feeling of like, oh my God, why weren't you better?
Yep.
The Duke is super aggressive. Which is a really interesting thing. And it's kind of that thing of like, you have to protect them, but also sometimes you have to kind of let them off the lead and really like let them wail on someone. Yeah.
I like the concept of it escalating, like a chess game that starts with less pieces and gets bigger.
Yeah.
Because the beginning of a chess game is kind of daunting. There's so much to choose from. But then at the end, it gets very...
Yeah. And it's one of these things that's kind of self-contained because when you put a new piece on, it has to go in one of the areas around the Duke. So if you've got
he's the spawn point.
He's the spawn point, yeah. Okay. So if you get him kind of like fortified, you kind of have left yourself no options. So you've kind of got to have him a little bit free to kind of move new pieces onto the board.
Duke can't be chained down.
No.
Health
which I quite like. It feels quite Shakespearean in terms of like, you know, he's got a bit of agency and he's got a bit of a kind of guile about him, you know. And you've got... So lots of different types of pieces. You've got foot soldiers, which are kind of like the pawns, and you've got wizards and mages and spearmen, lancemen. There's even got bowmen. So it's got a really, like, most of it will be kind of familiar to chess players, but it's also got a mechanic called strike, which is where basically it's long range chess. So if you get in there to kind of target range, they can take you out, which is really interesting.
Like, you said whenever you move a piece and then you flip it over and it has a new set of movements, do you always get to see what's on the reverse when before you move it?
Yeah, you can always check, yeah. Mm. And you kind of...
So it's not like chess where it's like, no, you touch that piece, you're moving that piece.
Well, I think that's, you know, I don't think you have to do that in chess. You know,
depends who you're playing
it's
with.
Just people choose to do that kind of thing.
Because only if you let go of the piece, right? Then you can still put it back with chess. As long as you're holding on to it.
I think we're in the like Monopoly region here where everyone has their own.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
How many take backs you're allowed.
I don't mind what it is as long as I'm not playing with a clock there. Well, that does my head in. But
I love the clock. I wish more games had a chess clock.
I've been in games where I wish there was a chess clock. Like, whenever there is one, I hate it.
I feel attacked there, Dickie.
Oh, no. I wasn't specifically talking about you there.
So, apologies for the innuendo here, but how do you beat the Duke?
Tenderly. So it's like chess. You can if you capture the other person's Duke, it's got a lot of like chess conventions. When you are like a move away from capturing the Duke, you've got to say guard.
Okay.
Not check. No. Guard.
You don't want to get sued by
the legally distinct guard.
I once met someone who said if you ever put the queen under threat, you should say en garde as like a polite, like, oh, I'm going to take your queen. Don't miss the obvious move.
All right.
I don't know if that's a...
you don't want... Oh, no.
No.
I can see it. That'd be very interesting.
Like, I don't have a poker face, so I kind of do that with my eyebrows. I'm like, oh, have they seen it yet?
All you can do is just look at it.
Look away, Dickie. Don't look at the queen. Stop looking at her. But yeah, going back to the Duke, it's nice because it's a smaller board than a chessboard as well, so it feels kind of more contained and more kind of urgent.
How long does one of these games take then?
So anywhere from kind of 20 minutes to 40 minutes, like chess, it kind of depends how long it is on how good you are.
And whether Ben put a timer down for you.
Well, exactly. Like there's no kind of, a quick game is not a good game. It's more about kind of the back and forth.
Cool.
Because you've got this thing where you can't really get a stalemate with this one. It's kind of, it feels quite urgent, which is nice.
Nice. That sounds pretty cool. Sounds good recommendation.
Very good.
Ben, did you want to go next?
Sure, yeah. I'm going to recommend a modern war game called Root.
Oh.
Like a tree root. And effectively, what it is is a ruthless, asymmetrical, dudes-on-a-map war game disguised as a family-friendly, cutesy animal romp in the woods.
It's so cute.
So there's four factions in the box, and there's like another four or eight factions available through the expansions.
Oh.
And there's an aristocratic bird kingdom. There's a industrialist cat-based expansionist. Chop down the forest and get industry and lumber mills going. There's a revolutionary foxes and mice and rabbits banding together to overthrow the invaders of the forest. There's adventuring raccoons and badgers. There's lizard cults and water folk and all these different factions. And each faction has completely different gameplay mechanics. And they're all trying to achieve completely different goals. Everyone's obviously trying to conquer and dominate the forest, but for different reasons and in different ways through different mechanics. So everything looks cute and lovely because it's all just birds and cats and badgers and stuff frolicking in the woods, but you've at the end of the day got to march your armies through this wood and conquer it for yourself. The reason I love it is because like I said, every faction is completely different. So although each individual mechanics are quite straightforward, it's very easy to learn how to play your faction. Learning how best to fight the other factions with your faction is really interesting. It's a lot like Rebellion, like we played earlier with the Empire versus the Rebels, but up to six players with 12 different factions available.
Wow.
If you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also fairly quick play. If you're only playing with two players, it's less than an hour.
Okay.
I think you can technically play it six player, but I wouldn't recommend it because that will just take 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
But three or four player works too.
Yeah. And the new expansion is designed to be good for two players. That was kind of the thinking behind the expansion, and it's really cool. You've got this horde of rats, which feels very Red War
like. Perfect. Yeah,
and then you've got Badger Templars, which is my favorite thing. Like, they're just awesome. They just kind of roam around the map kind of trying to pick up relics and hold on to them, while the rats are just like saying, no, I hit you in the face.
Perfect.
Drop your stuff.
I'm going to have to get that expansion.
But yeah,
I mean, in the base game, you know, you can play these rapidly expanding, industrial-centric, building your economy cat kingdom.
Mm.
Or the haughty birds who have to set out their traditions.
Right.
And the more you do, every turn you set these decrees down. And the more decrees you set down, the more stuff you get to do. But if at any point you go through this flow diagram of these decrees you've set up, And if at any point you can't achieve that action, that you can't conquer a territory or move an army in a certain way like you said you would, the whole kingdom, the whole, like, what's the word for them? Like the council of elders collapses and you have to bring in new advisors and you effectively miss your turn. So you're building this, like, program slash tableau of effects. And if you get too greedy and you can't sustain it, you have to then reset your whole, like, strategy for the next turn.
It's really great. It's a really weird feeling because you get to the point, it's a boom or bust. Mm. You get to the point where you know that it can't be done anymore and you go, that was a really good turn. Oh dear.
It's a shame my next turn is going to be like a revolution where all of my leaders are executed and the new regime's put in because I can no longer meet the crazy promises I said to the people last turn.
Yeah, it's just
just one faction, and then you've got like the River Folk or the Woodland Alliance who play like the Rebel Alliance from Star Wars Rebellion. They've got secret bases and they're trying to like get local support going and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I think they could have a lot of fun with it because it's such a simple theme, like woodland creatures having a battle. It feels a bit like, you know, Midsummer Night's Dream or whatever. You don't have to know any history or anything to get into it.
So everyone's trying to complete their own objectives. So how do you stop the other factions from completing those?
Well, that's it. You're trying to do yours, but you're also trying to interfere with them. So you can send in your armies or you can go and destroy, like, you know, you can burn down the cats' lumber mills or even just disconnecting the cats' lumber mills from where they're trying to build.
Right.
Because every time they produce wood, the wood is produced at the lumber mill.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to build a castle or a recruitment office on the other side of the wood, if you can run in and just sever that line of communication so they can't get their wood across there, you've put a real spanner in the works and they can no longer expand their industry.
Yeah, it's also kind of thought of this as well. There are dominance cards. So if your strategy isn't going well, throughout the deck there are like five dominance cards which will let you if you get them, it gives you a completely new different way to win.
Yeah.
Like control two corners of the map, for example.
Yeah, you can
like,
give up your core victory condition and just say, if I can hold these exact positions on the map for a whole turn with no one interrupting me, that I can win. That's like your Hail Mary, like victory condition.
Semi catch up mechanic.
I had a five player game of this once where we got to the point where everyone was one turn away from winning, and you were trying to complete your own thing while stopping everyone. Your whole turn was just stopping everyone else from doing their things, and then hoping that your thing would stay kind of where it was. And it's really tense and kind of brilliantly. It kind of does create these wonderful stories as well, I think, which, you know, old Will would really appreciate.
I think the biggest thing about Root is that the artwork is phenomenal, and that's what draws a lot of people to it. It's just this white, kind of weirdly wacky, wonderful animal artwork, which has a real style to it, and they've actually released a couple other board games now with that style in. And
shout out to Kyle Farron, who is just everything that boy touches turns to gold. He's such a good artist. I'm really excited for their next one as well. But yeah, he's
you're both pitching for me. I appreciate the support.
I won't buy anything Kyle Farron does the art for, to be fair. So sure.
And to the antithesis of that, so you've got Root with like wonderful artwork, and the board game that I was going to pitch is called Battle Line. So it's actually made by one of the probably most prolific designers, board game designers that are pretty much out there, which is called
Rainer Knizia.
And he makes his living just by making like board games and then sending them to other people to publish, basically. And I just get this like idea that he's just frantically in his workshop just making up weird and wacky mechanics and just like bringing them out. And basically, Battle Line is it's been out for quite some time. It's not the prettiest of games, but it reminds me almost like of like Romanesque kind of drawings, as it were.
Ooh.
And so there we go.
And you so, touched the button here.
Yes.
And so it's got this kind of like, it would probably be quite suitable in the era that you're playing, that the artwork would be like, it would make sense. You could probably play this.
You know, like when you see like a hoplite on a Greek vase.
Yeah.
And it's just like a dude stood there with the, that's what it looks like.
Cool. Okay.
So Battle Line is a game where you're trying to win by conquering these flags, essentially. Now, there are two ways you can win. You'll either take five of the nine,
and I'll explain how you do that in a second. Or you can take three in a single, like, connected row, as it were. Now, the game is kind of played using cards. There's two decks. There's one which is like 60 cards. It's six different colors, and each card has numbers 1 to 10 on. So you have lots of different ones, and they represent like four, like archers or elephants, various troops essentially. And then you have another one which is tactics deck, which basically takes the conventional rules that you've been currently playing with and then just throws them out the window a little bit. And what you're trying to do is, it's a little bit like poker. You're taking these cards that you have in your hand. So I think you have a hand of...
You have a hand of seven.
Seven, it is seven.
Yeah.
This is where I always just get dicky to...
Fill in the gaps.
So it's a hand of seven, and the idea is that you play a card down into one of those flags, and you can never remove it once you've like deployed one of your troops, as it were.
Effectively, the game... Imagine the game is you're both generals of opposing armies, and you're deploying into a battle line. And once you've all committed your forces into this line, you just then work out who wins the battle at the end, by who's put the right forces in the right part of the battlefield.
So you don't kind of...
You don't control the battle. You just deploy your battle lines, and then whoever has deployed most efficiently compared to the opponent's deployment ends up winning.
So, like, they rank the different kind of ways of putting cards down. So if you've got three consecutive numbers that are all the same color, that is the best you can do. That's fantastic. And they've all got terrible names, which I can't remember now.
It's essentially like straight flush.
Yeah.
But it kind of takes poker ways of doing it, three of a kind, flushes, straights, and various other bits, and then chucks it down. And they'll have the way in which the most powerful ones that you can create, you start placing one card at a time into these formations. But what's happening is your opponent's doing one at a time at the same time. And so every time you place a card, you're drawing another card. So you only have seven to choose from. So there's kind of like a give and take between trying to play a card that you believe will win you the, you know, that flag, as it were, one of these nine locations that you're placing it down, because you're hoping that either you've got something in your hand that will help you perform a very strong formation, or you'll be drawing something that happens.
But you can bluff as well. You can put down like two threes on one flank, and the opponent will think, oh, he's probably got the third one, I won't commit anything there anymore, even if you don't have the third three.
And the smart thing is that as the game progresses, you begin to be able to use the information about what's in the deck to start making decisions about what formations are left. So, for example, if I put a 10, which is the highest number, red, and then a 9 red, and then a 8 red, that is the strongest formation that could ever happen. And if I place that down first, then I know I'm going to win, because if you place the same formation down, then you're always going to win it. So what will happen is, because you go, I've placed this formation down, you cannot beat that, but that flag is now mine. And then you can start inferring information, being like, okay, they've played a blue 6 and a blue 8, so they're looking for the blue 7. And then you play the blue 7 elsewhere, suddenly you can be like, well, that formation that you've played down will no longer be the strongest, and therefore I can take it. So there's an element of denying them the ability to start playing on some of these flags, because you can start winning in these locations.
So you're each taking cards from the same deck?
So it's a centralized...
So you can, if you picked up that 7 in that scenario, you might want to keep that a secret that you've got that 7, and they're still fishing for it. But you know you can commit onto that flag, because you know they're never going to complete their set.
Exactly.
I think it's a really great, solid game, kind of through what we've explained. But the thing that really tips it over the edge is the tactics deck, which is 10 cards, which are all super overpowered. Like, they're all broken, overpowered cards. But the rule is that you can only play one more of those than your opponent has. So if I play one, I would have to wait until you play one to then play my next.
Okay.
So you can never get too far ahead.
And are they mixed in with the regular deck?
No, you've got a separate deck of them. And when you play a card, you can choose to either draw a normal card that's got a number and a color, or you can draw one of the super ones.
And what do they do to affect
They'll do kind of various things. Some of them affect the flags themselves, so mean that you need four cards instead of three to win, or the colors here are not kind of registered, it's just which is the biggest numbers.
Okay,
so kind of like
changing
things.
Like two leaders which are
can be anything.
Yeah, wild cards. Right. One of which is called Alexander.
And you know, the other one
don't
is Darius.
I don't know if that helps.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a whole load of things, and it's quite interesting. It's about 10 to 15 minutes to play this kind of game. It's very quick. Yeah. You can play several in a row. Mm. It's a very small, it's like literally like two decks of cards and then like some red pawns, essentially. And it's not the prettiest to look at, unless you love the Greek mosaics look.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It is.
Even then, I think you're overselling it. They don't even look as like that good.
Well, I personally think they're possibly the best artwork I've ever seen of a game.
I mean, it is one of these things where it holds a really special place in my heart because of how bad the art is. Like, it feels like a real hidden gem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's a real... I recommend it in the cafe all the time. Mm-hmm. No one ever plays it because it's ugly.
Yep.
It is from the dark days before graphic design was a thing.
Yeah.
and that is a problem because there are so many good-looking games out there at the minute. And, you know, it's... You don't judge a book by its cover, but when there are so many eye-catching covers, it's hard to look at the book, you know? Yeah. Like, but every time someone plays it, it's a real kind of win.
But it's genuinely like strategic. There's a bit of luck to it, obviously, with what you're kind of drawing, but equally you're trying to play, you know, probabilities or maybe what tactics you've got, the knowledge that you have versus what they've got. Can you see anything that gives you that edge? And with the fact that it's kind of running off a similar like poker kind of mechanic in terms of the formations, as it were, then it's also fairly relatable. So it is something that you can genuinely play, you know, a quick game of or play a couple of rounds through, and someone will be like, all right, now I get this. Let's play a real game.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you have any questions for us again?
In terms of the length, I think you mentioned, was it 20 to 30 minutes for the Duke?
And
then
that.
About an hour for Perfect. And then 15 minutes. Okay, just thinking how much how much time you'd want to spend with Shakespeare.
Probably as long
as much as possible. Yeah. I imagine. Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying,
just best of five. You don't want to do like a best of three of Root.
Yeah, he's in a rush. He's off to volleyball with Samuel Pepys, a diarist.
What's your gut saying? What are you thinking of those? Were they good recommendations?
Yeah, I think they were. They all have their strengths.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there like a countdown clock that
We
can edit one in.
Okay.
Oh. I'd like to think that this is because it was so close.
They're all so good.
I mean,
they're all so good.
I mean, to be fair to you as well, I think previously we've had guests who have been like doing it on what they would like. Mm. But you've got to take into account the feelings of, Caliban and Will.
Yeah, I think out of all the ones you recommended, it would probably be the Duke. I feel like that's...
Done it a bloody game.
winning streak continue.
Because it seems the most thematic for the period.
Yeah.
I feel like it's one that blah, 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 could just pick up and play, and seems like one that Shakespeare would know very well and probably know all of the ins and outs and how to kind of throw a bit of not cheating, but kind of exploiting
mind games.
And then they also get to use the shuffleboard.
And the shuffle, yes.
I feel like this, if we're going to have this, it should be immortalized in portrait form. I just think the Duke, you wouldn't take a second glance at it.
Yeah.
Like if you saw that in a portrait of the two playing.
Mm.
Like Root would stand out.
I'll have you painted wooden pieces. It's fine.
Are there?
Mm.
Oh.
little wooden animals with cutesy eyes.
Oh no! I mean, Root is something that I would love to play. I just don't know if it would work in the Shakespeare world as much, especially with like the communist factions.
One of them communist?
Because there wasn't really. There were, you got Robin Hood.
Yeah,
but he's
exactly Robin Hood.
Yeah, okay.
Like the Disney Robin Hood, who's a fox.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fits perfectly.
Yeah. And then Battle Lines also does sound... Yeah, I think I'm still going to have to go with the Duke, although I do really like the sound of Battle Lines. And again, it's one that I would play personally, and I like the artwork.
Good.
From what you showed me. Nice. I don't think it's bad. It's much better than what I could do.
Sorry, I'm just reacting on most of the other people that I've seen. Maybe I should have just let you make that judgment yourself.
Yeah. No, I kind of like the basic artwork.
Cool.
It works for me, but especially it reminds me of the art cards from like Total War Troy, unit cards. Mm-hmm. And especially, sorry, I'm talking about video games. I'm kind of mixing in my...
No, that's fine.
And there was the Total War, is it Britannia? Mm-hmm. Which was kind of... I love the Anglo-Saxon period, and I actually did do Anglo-Saxon reenactment for a time.
Oh, wow.
Mm. I was on Blue Peter for an episode. The presenter killed me.
And here's a reenactment we did earlier.
And where was I going with that? Yes. So with the artwork in Total War Britannia, the unit cards are very much in the tapestry design as well for that period of how they would have made it, drew back in that period as well. So I love kind of the historical element of that too. So, but I'm still going to go with...
Nice.
With the Duke.
The Duke.
Well done, Dickie. You continue your Titan of board game streak, as it were.
How many have you won in a row?
Five.
Oh, my.
Well, I've been on... Yeah, this is my fifth episode, so absolutely.
Yeah, you've won every episode that you've been on.
Yes. Yep.
One day, Ben, we'll manage
We're on twice as many episodes as him, and he's still got more points than us.
Oh.
He's too good. But thank you so much for being on.
Oh no, it's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's been really,
really good.
Good
fun. Thanks,
and,
man.
Where can everyone find you?
Canada. on social media, if you search Alex the Rambler in Google, hopefully I'll come up.
You have a YouTube channel.
I have
where
a YouTube
you play
channel.
Map games.
I play map games. I have a Twitch channel, which I play all kinds of strategy games. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm on Twitter and Instagram and stuff, but if you're going to be on Instagram, I'd probably follow my dog. Sir Nigel the Pup on Instagram.
Amazing.
Yeah, I love how you give your dog a better shout out than yourself. It's perfect.
Alex the Rambler on all social media, but the slash is the Rambler 146, which I should probably change everything to Alex the Rambler, because that was just the number that Google gave me. The Rambler was taken. So you can have 146.
That's just as good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, once again, thank you so much, Ben. It's been a pleasure. And that's all from us from the podcast today.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.